Part two of the Drinking While Black, the black experience in the craft beer world, is brought to you by North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline on North Center Road, as well as Altoona Liquor over in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Rochester Road. Go check them out. They support us, so we hope you support them. Drinking While Black was hosted by Robert of Better on Draft, bringing in people of color, of both fans of the industry as well as industry-specific people. You can see the video on youtube.com/betteronDraft, facebook.com/betteronDraft, and of course our IGTV, which is at Better on Draft. We are live Friday nights with Better on Draft at 7 p.m. Eastern on facebook.com/betteronDraft, youtube.com/betteronDraft, twitch.tv/bodpodcast, and betterondraft.tv. Follow us on all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's Better on Draft. And of course, find out what we drink by following us and friending us on Untapped Bod Podcast. Stay safe, and we'll see you in the next one.
Hello, everyone. We are back with the Better on Draft Podcast, part two of Drinking While Black, the black experience in the craft beer world. We have our panel here with Sasha, Barb, Damon, Kuma, Harry, and Wayne. We're going to go ahead and get into our next little talking points that we can get into. So one of the things that I wanted to also go through with everything that we kind of talked about in the first part, is to kind of talk about our own experiences and some of the weird experiences that we have had in the craft beer world, whether it being just going to a brewery and, you know, walking into a brewery and it's suddenly looking like everyone just started staring at you and stopped as the record skipped, to, you know, other things where we've gone to beer festivals and, like I've always said, has to be at a beer festival and counts the black people that are there so that I know where my allies are when I need to escape, if I need to escape. So I guess I wanted to start to just talk about in the beginning here, to talk about our unpleasant experiences that we've had in the craft beer world. So I'm actually going to start with Damon on this one.
Yep. Oh, did I? Oh, crap. Oh, my bad. The Cardinal. I don't even know how to bring it back.
There we go.
There we go. Sorry about that. So in addition to the work, you know, working in the industry, you're always being tested on your knowledge, for one. No one can believe that you know anything about beer, especially more than them. When I was just starting out in exploring beer and getting to know it and, you know, building my relationship with it, I had the opportunity to be taught by a beer professional. And what by that, I mean someone who you might find at GABF hanging out, handing out awards and stuff. He was teaching us how to, you know, beer sensory and stuff like that, and how to, you know, basically appreciate the beer and go through everything in it. At the end of one of these sessions, he walks up to me and he's like, "Damon, you're a bit of an anomaly." And already in my head, I'm thinking like, oh, where is this going? Yeah. Where is this going? He says, you know, people of color tend to lean more towards dark liquors, not beer. And, you know, being a much younger man and the climate being completely different than like it is today, I was a little bit more patient with him than he probably deserved, you know, and I kind of just, you know, at that moment though, I knew, even though he thought it was weird, it was kind of my place. I was creating a space for me and myself to be in this industry, to, cause I belonged there with everybody else who was enjoying the beers. But it's just that those types of comments, they can discourage you, diminish you, deter you, all the D words that you want to come up with. You know, it can deter black people from actually exploring their newfound interests. And it's just kind of dangerous and stereotypical. And like for someone that was pretty young at the time, like, to be honest, right now, I'm lucky that I didn't let that phase me and, you know, put me down enough to not explore it any further.
Gotcha.
Damon, it sounds like he didn't respect those hands.
Don't try me.
Because I throw hands. Yeah, so.
Did you do it to yourself.
Don't play yourself.
I have something to tell. So I want to say a couple of things. One thing is when you talked about going into spaces and counting the number of Black people that are there, this is literally how I met Damon. We were at a release at an Ann Arbor store for a brewery. And I'm in there. It's like summer. And I'm the only woman and I'm the only Black person. And I'm like, shit. You know, and so I'm looking around and you're like, I don't know, behind me or something. And
Sasha, was this the Equilibrium joint?
I was trying not to say no names of nothing. But you, since
at Bluefront.
Thank you, Harry.
And Ann Arbor.
So I was buying stuff and I look over and there you are. And so, but that's one of those things that I do. I go into a place and I'm like, okay, how many other Black people are here? How many other women are here? Because if there are no other Black people there, I'm going to then look to the other women that are there. Cause you know,
do you pick up the bar stools too, to see in case you got to swing one, see how heavy they are?
No, but I do know where the
I do.
Are.
I do.
And the next thing I want to say is that my experience is sometimes I listen to the stories that Black men say about the spaces that they go into, and it's different for me. I get a lot of the you must not like that kind of beer, or do you know what you're ordering, or you know, and the people will offer me the super light fruity thing. I also really like cocktails, and the cocktails I like are heavy on things like Italian Amaros. And so when I go and I ask for these things, people are kind of like, okay, are you sure that this is the thing that you want? So I get a lot of that. Are you sure? They're not outwardly, you know, like you don't belong here. There's no aggression behind it, but it's just this kind of, maybe you would prefer this, you know, light lager as opposed to a barrel aged stout. I get a lot of
like that. Like an implicit bias.
Do you?
Do I like a light lager? It depends. If I'm eating sushi, I want a light lager.
It was such a real
joy. I know that's going to mess up my whole palate if I'm eating. You know, it depends on what you're eating.
There. Kuma, what do you got? You've been in this for a while. Into this world.
Yeah. In terms of spaces, I mean, I don't know if I can point to any one particular instance where I definitely felt unwelcome or looked at. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of always a background thing. But I think for me, my experience of like questioning whether I'm welcome, questioning whether my experience is valued is sometimes I find myself in jobs where it feels like there's more friction to get things done than I anticipate. And I'm coming in like, well, I'm coming in with the experience. You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and put Glasshouse on blast. So Glasshouse Brewing Company is one of the worst experiences in my life, right? And so like that was a place that I haven't spoke on it very much, but realistically, like, I don't know, they're long out of business and whatever. And so that was, I came in to be their head brewer. I came in as the only person in that organization with brewing specific experience. They had years of experience running a glass business, a glass installation business. But this is, as any, I'd like to think sensible person knows, glass business and brewing business are very different types of businesses. And I came in with years of food service experience, bar experience, and enough years of brewing experience to run their brewery. And yet every step of the way I was being challenged with like, yeah, but. And I was just like, well, I mean, what are you basing that on? I'm basing that on what I know directly tied to the game of making this type of business work. And I'm trying to help you do that because I want all of us to succeed in this situation. But it's that sense of like, is this happening specifically because I'm Black? Like you can't shake it. You can't shake it. Like, it's just like, and, but the other thing is you can't ask it either. You can't directly just be like, is this because I'm black? Because they're, you know, like people are going to deflect. They're going to be like, no, it's not. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's true. But that's what you're going to hear, right? So it's just like you're just kind of stuck in the space of really fun, like trying to figure out like why? Why is this such a struggle to get done the thing that seems mutually beneficial to everyone involved with the experience that I'm bringing to the table, the knowledge that I'm bringing to the table to help get this thing off the ground and get this thing really working the way that that we want it to. So and for now, that's all I'm going to say on Glass House.
Which is no more.
All right.
So
which is no more and never again. They can join founders. Fuck Glass House too.
So much for that lifetime membership that I bought back then.
Right.
Because, you know, sorry to everyone who
it was their lifetime, not yours. So
there you go.
I bought that membership because Kuma was running it, and I believed in Kuma in making that bet as one of the best breweries ever going to be out there. And it just it felt like it just, you know, just Kuma was just standing on the rug, and it just pulled the shit from him. So it's just like I was like, well, y'all suck. So it's just kind of what it is. I'm gonna go to Barb next on that. Your uncomfortable or unsettling experience that you had in the craft beer world.
I want to be honest. I have not had a lot of bad experiences. I mean, I can't even think of like, and my experiences aren't tied to beer. They're tied to America. They're tied to how America is. So even my first beer was great. And the experience has been great since. Like, I've been in bars where I'm sitting there, and I like to sit there, and I like to go to bars alone, or I used to before COVID. You sit there, you have a drink, maybe you're doing your bills or taxes or whatever, you're reading a book, because I like the organized chaos. There's a lot of stuff around you, but you're sitting there and it's quiet. And I don't like when people go, hey girl, my biggest pet peeve is being called girl. I don't know why, but it always has. If you want a conversation to be over, have a white woman go, hey girl. So that's what I don't like. But see, that has nothing to do with breweries. That has to do with America. And I don't like, you talk to other people and then you turn to me and you go, what's up, girl?
And that's something you say to a child. If a white woman said to me, hey boy, it's going to be a different kind of conversation than she may have intended.
Yeah. So I
usually,
right after that,
you're trying too hard.
Yeah. I haven't been a girl since I was 10.
Yeah.
And then sometimes people will just go, my bad. Or, well, don't be so sensitive. But then we're going to get into it. But that has nothing to do with breweries per se. That has to do with America.
Yes. Yeah. It's a macro thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't attach any bad thing to any brewery I've been to or any beer situation or beer journey. It's been coming up roses for me.
Beautiful.
Fair enough.
The fact that a lot of breweries are in America. But other than that, you know.
Yeah, when people tell me, I told my mother, like, I haven't had a bad experience. She's like, well, maybe you have on rose-colored glasses. I'm like, no, when I hear, you know, people say I've had good experiences, I love everyone to have good experiences. Like, right. I want my daughter to only have good experiences. I'm going to go out of my way to have her have amazing experiences. Why not?
Yeah.
I would love her to go, yeah, my childhood was amazing. Not to get into it, but you guys know what I'm saying. So I've had great experiences. I love it.
Harry?
I don't know that I've ever shared this publicly. I know Wayne has seen this, and I don't know if he's noticed it. But Bruce Brothers also... there are a number of us that have some significant expertise in spirits as well. And so we have picked a number of bourbons, a number of private barrels that we have collaborated with a local store. And without exception, each of these barrels has received phenomenal acclaim, right? So, amazing. So when people post these bottles on some of these local bourbon groups. They post them and people talk about how amazing they are, blah, blah, blah. And when I pop in the conversation and I'm like, yeah, we picked that. There are certain people who every single time don't comment any further. So just a very kind of subtle, like, all right, well, I'm gonna back off of this. And the first time it happened, I thought it was me. I was like, oh, this is one time. I thought I was tripping out. But it's a pattern of some of the same people each time. So now every time I see one of our bottles, I make it a point and I make it my business to say, yeah, that's a Bruise Brothers bottle.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong. The vast majority of the bourbon community are highly complimentary. Like, yo, let us know when y'all doing another bottle. Let us know when we can get them. I'm like, man, you got to jump on it. They're usually gone in 24 hours, so on and so forth. But there's those conspicuous few that once they find out where the barrel came from or who did the picking, the curiosity wanes. Like nobody's talking about it anymore. These people are no longer chiming in, on this particular bottle, which I happen to know our bottles are excellent. So it's not a matter of disagreeing with the fact that it's good. It's obviously a problem with the individuals that had a hand in selecting.
But you know,
that sounds like another America problem.
It is an America problem.
Yeah,
it is.
That's the culture of America.
Yeah.
To do that.
Right.
Yeah. They're and still again, the larger community is very accepted.
All right. This is going to have to finish that one up.
Yeah, they're still buying and accepting that and enjoying that bottle. They just want to stop the acclaim so that we don't get it. You know,
yeah.
That's what happens, because there's no way, you know, we unfortunately aren't selling out those barrels on our own.
Right.
They're jumping on because they know we've got a reputation of having great picks, you know, so that's why they're gone in 24 hours. But yeah. The thing is, this whole segment, like Barb mentioned, and like you just said, it's a macro problem, because it's bigger than just a brewery. We've all got examples, and it's just life in terms of, you know, I've been one of the onlys in so many situations in many facets of my life, from the corporate side when I was a younger than 30 vice president at a Fortune 500 company.
That was only like 10 years ago, right? Because you're 39, right?
I know. I'm only 39 now. I mean, so just recent history.
I thought you was 38.
You know,
man.
So you ain't 39, man. 39. But so I'm like, it's three of us at the corporate retreat that has filled up the whole resort of three hotels, but it's three black people in the entire, you know, audience, you know, so they're always looking at you. They're always saying, and then when you're introduced as you're leading the pack or having the top numbers, or, you know, you walk into a brewery and they want to play you as if you're in the wrong place. And it does happen, just like Robert said, the record does screech to a halt. Everybody turns and listens to you, and you have to stand up and stick a toothpick in your mouth and act like Eddie Murphy, like you're the new sheriff in town.
Yeah.
And let them know that you're not afraid of these hands so that they don't step to you. Because like you said, we count the numbers where we are, and we pick up the bar stool just to know how we have to swing it just in case, because things have gotten crazy in different times. But all we want to do is go enjoy your beer.
That's typically,
we know more than the majority of people that are in the place. And like Sasha said, you know, they ask you and look at you like you're not only a noob, but in the wrong place. Don't know what you're doing. Don't know what you're having. And you can discuss brews or spirits or anything, you know, regarding liquor, as far as we're concerned, with the best of them.
With the best
of
them.
And it's unfortunate, because it takes away from you just want to go in and enjoy yourself. You know, whether it's the quiet, calm, like Barb mentioned, or just to go in and unwind and enjoy a good cocktail. I want to chase it with a great beer. I just want to have a great time, you know, a great experience. Right. But the sad part is I've always got to be on airs, because I never know when I'm going to have to throw these hands. just in case.
But
and it's really
Barstool to each other. But does it ever get to a point where it goes to the other end of the spectrum where it's where people are doing too much?
Oh God, yes.
It's the worst. Because when you're doing too much, you know what you're thinking.
Sasha yeah. can't go to the bar without leaving yeah. with a boyfriend, at least in his head.
Oh,
much is anyway. Never enough.
I got to hear what Sasha's story is. Sasha's clearly got a story.
Just Harry, you messing with me today? I can't. I got to.
I'm just saying. Did I say something that was inaccurate though?
Moving on. I've gone to places where it's like. I don't want to say any names. Okay. I feel like there's some breweries that I've gone to where it's almost like they knew that I was coming there, or like someone prepped them. If a Black person comes in here, you better get your shit. You like, you know what I mean? Right. And it was like over the top. And I'm like, no, for real. I just need a beer and I want to eat my food. Like, you don't have to keep coming over and talking. I just want to do my thing. Could you just leave me alone? I've had some experiences like that. But I mean, I've also had some that are right in the middle. Like, you just treat me like everybody else. That's what I want. I've been pleasantly surprised in some places that I thought were going to be like, what are you doing here? I will say one of them is Territorial Brewing. It's in Michigan, sort of near Battle Creek. And they had a Black is Beautiful, and I was on a road trip, and I said, I'm going to come back through here and I'm going to grab this beer while I'm out on this road trip. And it was like the only thing in that town. It was for real small. And I'm going, you know, my husband's looking at me like, you sure? And I got all the kids in the car, but I was just going to pick it up and leave. Right. And so I come in there and I'm the only one in there. I'm the only woman. I'm the only Black person. And it's a bunch of like typical looking white dudes, beer drinking white dudes that are sitting there. And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, I'm looking like, okay, how quickly can I get in and out of here? They were perfectly fine. Like, I can't say a bad thing about any of these dudes. They were perfectly fine. They talked to me about the beer. They talked about the organization they were donating to, why they wanted to do it. They were like, I see you, Kuma, with this beer.
Right. He, right. Hey, he's stunting on us, right?
Like, what does that whack mean?
So, I don't usually drink big stouts, but
you know, today
it's so tasty.
Well,
my God. Bar, what are you doing here?
Hey,
I put my finger in it.
Did y'all get some of this? Did y'all guess?
Kuma, you ain't right, brother.
We don't have a hookup, Kuma. We don't have a plug.
Right.
We're going to go into another topic here. So, you know, this is something that we've kind of talked about even on, you know, on the Brews Brothers, which kind of goes back to one of the founders episodes where we were talking about things that breweries can do that would increase their clientele diversity. And one of the things that I remember mentioning was good old Wu-Tang Wednesdays, which, you know, would be perfectly fine in a family setting because Wu-Tang is for the children. So that's there's no problem.
Wu-Tang
with
is for the children.
But are
MOP
there,
Mondays, that might for not go over as well, but I'm with it.
Right. I mean, I guess that's what I'm looking for is like, what kind of event do you think breweries should add to in their breweries that will, you know, make it into a more comfortable setting, knowing that, you know, you don't have that uncomfortable feeling walking in and you open the door and the record scratches because everybody wasn't really expecting, you know, someone of color walking the door. But, you know, if you have something like a certain day of the week where all you do is play 90s hip hop, then, you know, that yeah. should be the expectation. And
when does it become pandering?
I'm going to feel comfortable in that space.
That is pandering.
So, Barb, you bring up a good question. I don't want a hazy IPA in a 40-ounce bottle. That's not what I want. But I'm going to tell you what
I think
dope.
That's gross. And I don't want pandering.
But I'm going to tell you what was dope, though, and very organic, was when Cultivate did that hip-hop trivia. Mm-hmm. It brought out
so mad I missed that.
Right? Oh, man. We blew it out, too. But that's another matter. We went home with a trophy, got the drink tickets.
But
shop.
You also know where it's coming from because of the owner.
You know it's
so
coming
it's,
from a genuine place.
So there's no pandering.
Just like, yeah. So just like when we look at Whenever we talk about this, I think about Monkish out on the West Coast, and most of their beers have like these obscure hip hop references in their name. None of the owners are Black. However, on any day of the week, when you go into Monkish, it is clear that these individuals are into hip hop culture. They're not exploiting the culture.
Yeah.
It's clear that this is like they've been into the culture since it began, or since they were very young. So, and you can even tell by some of the labels and by some of the titles, because these titles are so obscure. Only someone who was really into the culture in terms of hip hop would know where Bomb Atomically comes from, or would know where, you know, Planets Gotta Rotate comes from. And so,
and they do have people of color on staff in there too.
But, oh, absolutely. So, you know, you understand and know that it's coming from a genuine place. And so if Founders was to name a beer, you know, Bomb Atomically, I would not look at it so favorably because of who they are. So I think it's just as much, right. It's more who they are than what they're, you know, putting on a label or putting out as advertising.
Yeah. But I guess in terms of the thought of it being pandering, I guess this is, it feels like that kind of chicken versus the egg thing. I get it where, you know, it's because you know where it's coming from with the owners, but you don't get to know the owners to get where it's coming from unless you're there at the brewery to get to know the owners. So I guess I'm a little stuck on this, because it's just like, if a brewery were to do something like that, I mean, is it going to just immediately going to be seen as pandering, or
it's something you can't give it the
benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, and for me, it's something you can't quite articulate. Like, if I roll up in Monkish and they're playing, you know, and they're playing tracks from Hard to Earn, which is my favorite Gangstar album, I'm gonna be like, okay, I mean, this album came out when I was a sophomore in high school or junior in high school. And again, somebody who's immersed in the culture will understand what a classic album this is, as opposed to going to Founders and they just happen to be playing 50 Cent's latest album. And I'm like, okay, this is something different.
Well, my other thing is we're not a monolith either. Like,
we're not a monolith. A lot of absolutely.
We don't need to have rap music playing in order to feel welcome or any sort of way. There are Black people that don't like rap music. That doesn't matter.
Show them to me.
I'm just saying. Like, we invented classical music. So if you play that in there, like, we've been in quite a lot of genres of music. So maybe if you play any music, it belongs to us. So we should feel welcome wherever we go. I mean, honestly, it doesn't have to be a certain brand or genre. They don't have to have, you know, the what were you saying? The 40 ounces?
Music. 40 ounces.
That's not the music.
Yeah, they don't have
to
imperial the vibe. IPA and 40 ounces.
It's the vibe.
It's the vibe.
It's the vibe.
It's the vibe.
It's not about the music.
It's the vibe. All the vibe. And the vibe, you can't fake the vibe, because when you go into a place and it's not just the owner, but it's the people that they attract. It's their clientele.
So it is, you know, the owner. That's what, because the owner is in charge of the vibe.
I think it comes from the top.
Right, but I'm just saying.
They're the head of the fish.
But if you don't meet the owner, because, you know, birds of a feather do flock together, then you feel that vibe when you go in that it's okay. Versus when you walk in, no matter what music is playing, we know that the vibe is off. And when the vibe is off, now you're on high alert. And, you know, now your experience has changed. But when the vibe is right, and it is top down because the owner does create it, then, you know, that's all we're looking for, a good vibe. The music is meaningless, because whether you play music or not, whether it's rap music, gangster, you know, gangster rap, classical, top 40s, you know, we one of our Bruise brothers, Mark Donkers, put out the 100 top hits of 1984. Okay. You know, that was before I was born, but I'd heard a lot of those hits. You know, I said, allegedly. Wow, that was a great year.
Allegedly.
That was a great year for music. You know, it was from Prince to Madonna to Phil Collins to U2. You know, everybody else was, you know, was on there. Yeah, you know, because at the time I was 2 years old in 1984. But I was like, wow.
Don't even know who Prince is.
Great collection of music. You know, so, you know, those are the things that it's the vibe.
Speaking on the vibe, like I really feel like that is set by a service staff. I think more than anything, that's who's actually curating the experience, right? Yeah. Those are the people who you're going to get your product to and ideally in a bar, you know, especially in breweries. Like if in normal times, anyway, if you're sitting at the bar, you can have a chat with the bartender. But if that bartender walks up and says, you know, what can I get you? And then silence. Sets down a beer and then disappears and goes and visibly is talking at the other end of the bar to someone else.
Your vibe is gone.
Completely hi, do I really got to shout to get your attention and get another beer?
Yeah, that's my one and done situation. I'm going to drink this one that I'm going to have to pay for and I'm out.
It's definitely a reason why they call it the hospitality industry.
Exactly. You know? And that's the thing. If you can extend hospitality to every single person at your bar, every single person at your tables, every single person who walks through your doors, then that's your vibe's all off. Your whole vibe's off. And we ain't coming. Yeah.
All right. Damon, do you have anything else to add to it?
To be honest, it was really everyone kind of touched on it. It's really the hospitality of it all for me. So at like Play-Doh, we have this credo. Warmth, graciousness, and hospitality. So when someone comes in, we greet them. We say, hi, how you doing? How can I help you? We say it to everybody, regardless of who they are, you know, how they come in, whatever it is. We try to cultivate that type of atmosphere around, you know, making sure that everyone is feeling welcome and included. So if you're not being hospitable towards me, you're not, you know, checking on me, or even, you know, you don't have to have a conversation with me every time, or every person you see, but you know, just checking in goes the longest way. Like Kuma said, if you're down at the other bar, in the other end of the bar, just chit chatting with somebody, and I'm over here with an empty beer, chances are I'm heading out after that. So,
and you know,
you guys agree
when that. Barb, you took the words right out of my mouth. It's obvious that it's intentional there. So that's the thing with things like that. It's got to be intentional. If you leave it up, if you leave it to chance and expect that people know to be courteous to everybody, then you're going to lose. But when you make it part of your credo and say, hey, every person who walks through this door or rolls through this door, whatever the case might be, should feel welcome here. And this is a place where they should feel comfortable, regardless of
and everybody should know. We've told this story on both the Better on Draft and the Brews Brothers formats. Is that 8 Degrees Play-Doh, because of the vibe, is how the Brews Brothers podcast got started. Ken and I met down at 8 Degrees. We were just at the bar together and we started chit-chatting. Next thing you know, we struck up, you know, and we're kicking in and say, hey, why don't you guys come on our show? You know, I invited Ken to become a member of Brews Brothers. It was invite only.
Wayne,
we
showed up like, on Brews Brothers. On Better on Draft?
And, you know, and I mean, so it was that vibe that got us going into the podcast world that put us together.
Right.
You know, so that just goes to show that there was no music playing. I mean, if it was, I don't know. Tim has a crazy sense of, you know, style anyway.
I was gonna say,
so it's no telling what Tim had playing.
Right.
It could have been limiting
a couple comments that we had in the chat here. There was one that said, pandering is like porn. You know it when you see it, which, you know, is definitely true. And another comment on the Facebook chat from Bernard Jackson, he said, it's easy. Just make good beer, be decent people. We don't need or want a gimmick, which.
That's my brother right there. Hey, shout out to Bernard Jackson.
Bruce co-founder.
It's really that easy.
Yeah, without not here.
Can be, it should be, it ought to be.
Shout out to our co-founder, Bernard.
Yeah,
we're going to go into one more here. This may wrap it up. But now over the years, you know, Better on Draft has talked quite a bit about breweries and efforts to, you know, have diversity inclusion. They've we've mentioned programs. You know, there's been obviously the little internship, or not rather the internship, but the scholarship program that we had with Schoolcraft. And there's been a lot of different collaborations with beer groups like, you know, Fermenta, the Detroit Draft Divas. But of course, we as Black people, we don't have a level of group like that. Like a, I think it's a 501c group on our own. Now, I will say several of us have tried to do that ourselves, but of course, life got in the way. We suddenly grew 20 years older than Wayne, apparently, and either got a house, busy distributing our you know, our wares in 46 states, or just voluntarily got kids. But should we get to a point, and I love my kids, man. I absolutely love my kids. But should we make our own group? I mean, we obviously, like I said, a couple of us have tried, but it kind of, like I said, it fell out in time. But should we have our own group, or should it just be left to what the Brewers Association is doing with Dr. J and the diversity group and, you know, all of the other
groups
that have their own segment where we don't, Sasha, as Black people, we don't have our own group as a space?
She didn't even apply.
Sasha just gave me the Black mama face.
I begged her to apply.
Hey, so, in response to your question, Robert, that's actually something that Bruce Brothers aspires to. We haven't really announced it, but we match the Fermenta scholarship. So, I mean, it's something that we are a part of in terms of diversifying the industry. And getting, you know, not only people, not only Black folks, but women too, and Black women for that matter, you know, involved. And there's going to come a point where we are able to, you know, fund entire scholarships or fund larger scholarships. But as it stands right now, we do have, I don't know if it's an agreement. We haven't put anything on paper. However, we've been matching the Fermenta scholarship. So those recipients receive the initial scholarship from Fermenta, as well as a match from Bruce Brothers.
Getting a 501c3 together is tough.
If that's a conflict of interest, Harry, for me to apply for that scholarship, I just want to, don't give me that face. Just want to say that.
It's not. No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's definitely not a conflict of interest, Sasha.
It'd only be if you work for Fermenta.
Right. I've served on a few different boards that have 501c3s, and being a member of Bruce Brothers and even one of our co-hosts is not a conflict of interest because you're not on the board of Fermenta. So therefore it was okay. And the thing too is we definitely have discussed Bruce Brothers evolving into a 501c3 type of organization. But like Barb mentioned, it gets down into the time commitment to get that happen if you don't want to pay somebody to put it together for you. You know, it's easy just to pay somebody to put it together for you. But being that we aren't a for-profit organization, we don't collect a lot of funds, you know, so we don't have a lot of funds to pay an attorney that can draw up the papers and help put that, you know, in place for us. So at some point, look for Bruce Brothers or some type of spinoff to be a 501c3 organization, because we need it. You know, we don't just need to partner with others. We need to control our own destiny. We need to be able to help control the situation where we're going, you know, and that way we can influence decision makers even more. You know, right now it's great. The influence we have as a podcast is phenomenal, you know, but if we were actually a nonprofit sanctioned 501c3 organization, we would definitely be able to have greater influence in terms of this, you know, inclusion and diversity within the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Kuma, anything to add?
I think there is definitely room and good reason to have an organization that does focus predominantly on primarily on getting more Black folk into the industry. I know, Rob, Harry, you and I have talked about it. I'm sure other combinations of folks here have talked about it. It's definitely one of those things I think, like was pointed out, that like, you know, unless you got the means to pay a lawyer to kind of handle that for you, that's time off of your schedule when you already got a full schedule. And that's the tricky thing. That's not that at least currently seems like a barrier. And so yeah, it's something I like to see happen, and you know, like it's something I'm willing to help make happen. We got quite the collective right here, so maybe that's something we got to talk about going forward back in the group chat. But
here's the board.
Hey yeah. Man, my boss right, is such got, an ass. This,
yeah. You said your boss what?
Man, my boss is such an ass. I can't really get a lot of time on that guy. He's
man,
a monster.
I'm surprised Wayne is on now. I'm surprised his boss let him do
don't
this.
Don't tell anybody. If he pans out, I'm going to be in trouble.
I hope his boss not on Facebook.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps us up here. We're kind of running out on time. So I think that for at least this session, that pretty much concludes our conversation here. I'm really hoping that this was interesting, informative, and
I like this, Robert. This is cool.
Cheers.
I'm hoping that this is something that can definitely be done in the future. I mean, who knows? Maybe even like a Juneteenth episode to go to a part three.
Yeah.
Eddie Wayne will have his internet this again. By then.
Exactly.
You need to get on this podcast train, Wayne.
I mean, Wayne's young. He's a millennial. You know, 39. He's got the tech savvy. He can figure it out. We'll get it together.
Hey, Robert. Right. Hey, I appreciate you putting this together, man, and inviting me and inviting Bruise Brothers to participate. This is something that I agree, man. We need to do this on like on some sort of prescribed periodic basis. I know we had in the show notes mentioned potentially talking about the Beer and Racism book, so maybe we can do that at a later time, because it really is an excellent read, and anybody that's interested in that dynamic should check it out. I want to really quickly give a shout out to the Good Beer Hunting website. So a lot of times we talk about the lack of focus or the lack of inclusion of Black folks when we talk about the industry. So they reached out to me about a week ago, because they wanted to talk to me about Holmes making the USA Today list in terms of brew pubs, you know, the best brew pubs in the country or whatever. And so to reach out to me, you know, I would imagine there was some intentionality saying, hey, we got somebody who doesn't fit our normal profile that we can reach out to, you know, that has some familiarity with that piece. So shout to them. That article should be popping up any day now, I assume. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right.
All right. So that is
everyone. Thank you. Hey, man,
we can call it a field trip.
Hey, Robert,
I'll be there. I'll just very quickly.
In my sightings.
I thank you so much for the opportunity. This was a great format tonight. We had a great time. And I applaud you because you've done something that I've been unable to do. And that's get Sasha the Beer Girl and Barb Hollywood Baker together at one time, because they won't come see me, you know, collectively. So, you know, maybe if you call the meeting, or the share together, we can get everybody, the gang, back together.
For we see each other. We just don't go to your house. Your
address, we maybe can work something out.
I will see what I can do, but that will do it. Obviously, shout out to our sponsors, North Center Brewing and Zatuna Liquor. You can obviously check us out on Facebook at Better on Draft, Instagram, Bod Podcast, Twitter, Bod Podcast. On Twitch is Bod Podcast. I think that is all of them. Hopefully I did not screw anything of those up.
Check out Bruise Brothers.
Joe Gerst and Bruise Brothers. Check out that Bruise Brothers podcast. And to end out, to quote Joe Gerstant, a business consultant for diversity inclusion, he said, if you do not intentionally, deliberately, and proactively include, you will unintentionally exclude.
Every time.
And with that, no matter what you drink, we think it is better on
draft.
Better on draft.
Love and y'all. Soul. Good night.
For the culture.
For the culture.
Good night.